It is Thursday, June 20th, 2013, and from the Carver Center for Public Radio, this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas. The 5th annual KUAF Fulbright Chamber Music Festival completes its 2013 season with a performance this evening at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Concert Hall. U of A Music Department faculty and guest artists will perform Lieberman's Trio No. 1 for flute, cello, and piano, and Shostakovich's Piano Trio in E minor. Admission is free tonight with a reception to follow the performance. More information is available at fulbrightsummermusic.uark.edu. KUAF is supported by Kumon Math and Reading Centers, which are located in Fayetteville, Lowell, and Bentonville. Kumon offers learning for the long run, a path to become confident, independent, self-reliant people all parents hope their children can be. More information is available at kumon.com.
Later on this edition of Ozarks, we'll talk to six of the more than 80 musicians who participate in the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. This month, for the third consecutive year, the orchestra is formed in mere days to present concerts all over Northwest Arkansas.
We also continue our series on what happens at the Arkansas Research and Technology Park, and we find out what happens at the Office of Innovation.
But first, a new poll by the Washington Post and ABC News confirms findings from other media surveys showing a majority of Americans support the National Security Agency's surveillance programs. After attending classified meetings and a top-secret briefing through the Appropriations Committee, Arkansas Senator John Bozeman says he's pleased with public relations efforts by intelligence agencies. Senator Bozeman admits citizens should know some of the reasons for the NSA's collection of phone records and specific online data to thwart acts of terrorism.
I think the concern I have is it appears that the programs seem to have overstepped their boundaries. You know, when you're essentially taking everybody's phone numbers and then storing that data, you know, for extended periods of time, years, so that you can go back and look in the future. So what we've got to do is make sure that we're safe without giving up the freedoms we cherish.
Senator Bozeman says he would like to see a more targeted effort by the NSA to curb terrorism rather than the mass collection of personal digital data from American citizens.
The State Board of Election Commissioners approved a draft of rules for implementing the Voter ID Act passed by the Arkansas General Assembly. The law requires voters to provide a form of photo identification before casting a vote. Commissioner Stuart Soffer says the range of acceptable ID types dispels his concerns about the new requirement.
The amount of ID that is acceptable is overwhelming. It is just absolutely overwhelming. If you take a look at it, I just fail to see how anybody is not going to have one of those forms of ID. They threw such a far net. The net they cast is just so wide and so far. This is why I get so frustrated when I hear all the naysayers.
However, others like State Senator Joyce Elliott criticized the bill during the legislative session, saying the requirement is an unnecessary hurdle that hinders the elderly, disabled, and poor from asserting a constitutional right to vote. Previously, Governor Mike Beebe cited studies indicating ID requirements could disenfranchise between 2 and 9% of the electorate.
Work is expected to begin soon on clearing the Cache River. Since the 1940s, silt, logs, and other forms of debris have slowly clogged the river in Jackson County. The result includes four log jams, two of which were at least a mile wide. Jackson County Judge Jeff Phillips.
The biggest concern is the siltation in the river. And right now, the log jam stops the siltation from up north. And where that river's been cleaned out up north, there's a lot of siltation that comes down, and it keeps building. And now, in Grubbs, you can't even, back there where the log jam is, you can't even tell there's a river there. It's just shrinking its way around and through all those logs and siltation and stuff.
When rains come, the log jams cause flooding to roads and farmland because only trace amounts of water can move through the log jams. The Army Corps of Engineers issued a permit to remove two of the largest log jams, and Governor Mike Beebe pledged $150,000 for the removal of the log jams. That's expected to cost $249,000. The Cache River and Willow Slough drainage districts have also pledged to support for the removal, which could take 2 months. The smaller log jams are expected to be removed next year.
June is National Lesbian, Gay, Bisexual, and Transgender Pride Month, and the Special Collections Department at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville has organized an exhibit in honor of the month. Out of the Closet, located near the circulation desk in Mullins Library, includes books, journals, pamphlets, and newspaper clippings that reflect the life of people in the LGBT community on the U of A campus and in Northwest Arkansas. Catherine Wallach with the Special Collections Department at Mullins Library says that the collection unearths some surprising history about the LGBT movement in Northwest Arkansas.
Someone had planted a homemade bomb at a gay rights rally in 1985 at Wilson Park, an event with University of Arkansas Gay and Lesbian Student Association. And that kind of shocked me that something like that would happen right here in Fayetteville.
But times have changed. The Associated Student Government no longer withholds funding from LGBT student organizations. And in 2007, Eureka Springs established a registry for declaring domestic partnerships in the city. Wallach says that finding the materials for the exhibit was slightly challenging.
It's surprising how long it takes to dig out all those different materials for what looks to be a very small exhibit. And also the language and the terminology that we use now is not the language that has necessarily been used historically. So you have to be kind of creative with your search terms and with the documents that you search through.
Although the exhibit may appear small, Wallach says that the Special Collections Department has additional related materials not on display. The exhibit will be on display until September.
The Arkansas Highway Transportation Department yesterday announced federal funding awards for 31 safe routes to school programs in the state, totaling $2 million. Of that, around $594,000 was awarded to 9 programs in this area, including more than $216,000 to Westwood and Elmdale Elementary Schools in Springdale, $100,000 to the city of Harrison, just more than $81,000 to the city of Fayetteville, and $60,000 to the city of Mena.
The Fayetteville Historic District Commission has announced recipients of this year's Historic Preservation Awards, honoring projects, organizations, and individuals for commitment to preservation in the city. Honorees include the restoration of the Mock Fulbright House and Arcega's adaptive reuse at the historic Fayetteville Depot, both receiving awards for best practices. Winners of the Mayor's Award for Outstanding Service in Historic Preservation include the History Minute video series, produced by the city's government channel, the Project Fayetteville Digital Image Archive, created by the Fayetteville Public Library, and Up Among the Hills, the documentary about Fayetteville, directed by Larry Foley.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals had their 4-game winning streak broken last night. They fell to the Arkansas Travelers 8-3, though the Nats did win 3 of the 4 games in the series played in North Little Rock. They'll continue to play on the road tonight as the Nats take on the Drillers in Tulsa.
Expect partly cloudy skies this evening with overnight lows from 69 in northwest Arkansas to 74 in the Arkansas River Valley. Tomorrow, your Friday, mostly sunny with highs from 88 to 93. Tomorrow evening, partly cloudy with overnight lows in the upper 60s.
This is Ozarks at Large. The road to capitalizing on research and development can be a long one. It can take years before a technology startup actually turns research into a physical product. In the second part of our series on the Arkansas Research and Technology Park, Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis takes a look at a pair of companies turning research into revenue.
Arkansas Power Electronics International started where many tech startups in Northwest Arkansas do, in the Genesis Technology Incubator at the Arkansas Research and Technology Park. At that point in 2002, the company was operating in a 100-square-foot office and had 3 employees. But as the electronics packaging outfit found success in development of its products and found markets to target with those products, the company needed more space. So when the Enterprise Center at the park opened, APEI occupied 30,000 square feet of manufacturing space on the building's ground floor.
The growth of our company has kind of been very synergistic with the growth of the park, in that when the building's going up, we're already in there before it's even foundation is poured. And so it's been very nice. Things just seem to open up for us as we have a little growth spurts and things like that. I know it's been challenging sometimes to kind of keep up with our growth, but Phil Stafford has done a great job.
That's Charmella Mounts, the Director of Business Operations for APEI. We'll hear more from her and Craig Olenicek, the company's co-founder and vice president of engineering, in a few minutes. But first, as I walk into the Enterprise Center, I see a resource that apparently is as important to entrepreneurs and engineers as it is to journalists. Coffee. A Jam and Java coffee shop is located right in the lobby, allowing people working in the park to grab a quick bite of lunch or a cup of joe without having to leave the campus. Beyond the coffee shop, though, the Enterprise Center is home to five affiliates, including the Sustainability Consortium, APEI, and SFC Fluidics. Here's Phil Stafford, the executive director of the UA Technology Development Foundation, the governing body which oversees everything at the park.
Enterprise Center is the commercialization hub for the Arkansas Research and Technology Park. So once the designs of a technology have been fully optimized and they're ready for production, and this would be the place where you would come to do the production.
As I mentioned earlier, SFC Fluidics is one of those companies that is capitalizing on its products. Sai Kumar is the company's vice president of research and development. He joined the company 3 years ago.
The company has transformed from being mostly research-focused company that it was to product-focused company. So most market-driven and capitalizing on the research that has been done over a number of years.
The company's research focus is in the realm of microfluidics, or the study of microscopic fluid flow. In nature, the xylem and phloem of vascular plants, like trees, are examples of microfluidic structures, as the microscopic channels transport water and nutrients throughout the plants. But the work at SFC Fluidics is more focused on lab work than work in the forest. The company has two products already on the market, one of which is a system of snap-together connectors designed to make assembling microfluidic systems easier and to eliminate problematic leaks and air bubbles. The other is a small footprint pump designed for microfluidics and lab-on-a-chip applications. Kumar says that to bring those products to market, it took a shift in the culture of the company.
This product development transformation was primarily based on scheduling a launch of a particular product. Okay, that was the very first thing that we did. And we said, by this time, we want to put our product out there. What does it take to do that?
He says that the two products already on the market are pushing the company to other product launches as well.
We are generating some interest in the community with respect to individualized utilization of these components. And we also have come up with a kit concept. Just like you will have a Legos type of thing, if somebody wants to build something very quickly. So we are putting together this developer's kit for the microfluidics.
In addition, the company has formed a partnership to take the pump that's already on the market and customize it for drug delivery applications for a larger, unnamed company. Kumar says that with marketization, the company has come a long way since when he interviewed with the company back in 2010. At that time, it was still located in the Genesis Incubator facility, and he says the company seemed cramped into the smaller space. But things are much different now.
It would be like a Cadillac. You know, what we are in the Enterprise Center, it's very expensive. At the same time, you know, we do have adequate space. I think it's probably a little more than what we need, by 20-25% more than what we need. But it gives us a presence, and also when the customers and partners and other people visit, for the visitors, it makes a very good impression.
Speaking of space, as I mentioned earlier, Arkansas Power Electronics International has several thousand square feet of manufacturing space on the first floor of the Enterprise Center. But this isn't manufacturing like you would typically think of. Because the company manufactures high-power, high-density electronics, its manufacturing lines are located inside Class 1000 clean rooms. Clean rooms are highly controlled climates where temperature and humidity are controlled and airborne particulates are filtered out to prevent contamination in the production process. The Class 1000 designation means that there are less than 1,000 ambient particles in every cubic foot of air in the room. Phil Stafford says that APEI's transition from prototyping to manufacturing helped inspire the construction of the Enterprise Center.
As it turned out, there were a few other companies like SFC, like NN Labs and Nanomec, that were also ready and in need of that kind of space. So in this case, we built a 65,000 square foot building. It was strictly core and shell. And why you see these laboratories, it was a collaborative effort between our design engineers and the design engineers, if you will, at Arkansas Power Electronics International, same is true upstairs, working together to understand exactly what kind of space they need, and then we build it out to their specifications.
That mindset of working closely with the tenants, as well as the other resources of the Research and Technology Park, have helped APEI grow over the past decade, garnering federal research grants and contracts with the Department of Defense. Craig Olenicek is the company's co-founder and chairman of its board of directors.
The way I look at the Research and Technology Park, there's so many different pieces of it that minimize our risk, such that we maximize our probability of succeeding, maximize our probability of delivering to our customers because of the so-called subsidization of our laboratories, our offices, all of the resources of the university, which we don't have to purchase outright. We can purchase on an hourly basis as needed.
And considering the markets the company targets, driving down exposure to risk is crucial. Whereas most electronic devices rely on silicon chips as their main circuit components, APEI focuses on development of chips and circuits using other materials that are hardier to extreme conditions, whether they end up in the high temperatures of underground mining operations, or jet engines in the sky, or even in the gamma radiation found in space.
Silicon carbide and gallium nitride are known to be more radiation hardened than silicon solutions. So from that point of view, this enables certain systems to be designed and implemented that previously you would never even think about. If silicon can go to 125 degrees C, you wouldn't be thinking of using silicon in smart sensor networks inside a jet turbine engine at 1500 degrees C.
Olenicek says that the electronics they develop can operate reliably at 450 to 500 degrees Celsius, enabling sensors to be placed in certain parts of a jet turbine that were never before possible. And doing things that have never been done has garnered attention to APEI. Again, here's Sharmella Mounts.
We have some customers, because of our reputation, they come to us because they can't get whatever problem it is to work, and they feel that we have the capability here.
And problem solving is something that Olenicek says is not only inherent in Arkansas Power Electronics International's reputation, but he also credits that attitude to the critical mass of entrepreneurs that fill the park, which he says builds a camaraderie among the various startups.
And I think it's that interaction between and among people who work in these various companies that we find interaction and overlap. And my needs might be something that a partner company can give and so forth. So I think that's also a very interesting piece of the Research and Technology Park, which is this ethos that exists in the park of people having very like mindsets in trying to move forward and advance the state of Arkansas by advancing products and technology.
And as I was repeatedly told, the park's purpose is not only advancing technology development in the state, but it's also meant to keep the talent in Arkansas that makes those technology advances possible. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
And Timothy Dennis will conclude our three-part series on the Arkansas Research and Technology Park tomorrow on Ozarks at Large.
Support for Ozarks at Large comes in part from the University of Arkansas's Women's Giving Circle.
The 23rd Annual Riverfront Blues Festival will begin tomorrow and continue Saturday at Harry E. Kelly Park in Fort Smith. Performing artists include guitarist Johnny Winter, Wanda Watson and Mark Albertson, Jeff Strahan, Oreo Blue, and more. Show begins Friday, tomorrow night at 6 p.m. and Saturday evening at 5 p.m. Tickets and more information are available at riverfrontbluesfest.org. And later on this edition of Ozarks at Large, what it takes to put the Artisphere Orchestra together. It's an innovative process. Earlier, we heard a story about research and development. Christina, you also have been thinking about innovation and originality.
I have been thinking about innovation and originality. I recently opened office on the University of Arkansas campus. It's called the Office for Innovation in Education. And I was reading the New York Times earlier this month, the Sunday New York Times, and noticed something that was kind of cool, kind of made a connection here for me. On the front page of the Sunday Review, there was an article titled "Who's Minding the Schools?" by Andrew Hacker and Claudia Dreyfus. It was sort of a criticism of the new Common Core state standards for education. Arkansas is one of 45 states to approve and enact these standards, which we've reported on in the past. Something else I noticed in that Sunday New York Times.
Very same issue?
Very same issue. Was the New York Times Magazine was the innovation issue. Mm-hmm. So thus a connection was made between education and innovation.
And here is your story about the Office for Innovation in Education on the University of Arkansas campus.
Yes. The final lines of the opinion article written by Andrew Hacker and Claudia Dreyfus read, "Still, there's an upside to Common Core's arrival. As the public better appreciates its sweep, there's likely to be much discussion about schools and what we want them to do. Ideally, this will involve a reconsideration of the contours of knowledge and the question of how we can become a better educated nation." With that, a new office has been opened at the University of Arkansas in partnership with the Arkansas Department of Education to figure out what we want schools to do and how they can better teach and test these new Common Core state standards. Denise Arola is the director of the newly opened Office of Innovation of Education. For her, innovation is a way of thinking, outside the box.
There's so many different layers that go on in education, and it's very easy to see obstacles instead of opportunities. It's very easy to feel boxed in by what supposedly you are allowed to do and not think about how you could do things. If we just pushed a little bit on this edge, could we get something different from this than what we originally thought we could get? So I see innovation as a way of thinking, as a way of freeing up how you think about solving some longstanding or just current and sometimes intractable problems. It's a more open way of problem solving, almost through creating different ways of thinking about some of the same things.
She says innovation in education is evolving. Some states have offices and positions that are working on it. The United States Department of Education has one, and it's been around for years, trying to get people to think about how to develop new solutions to things that we can't solve through our longstanding solutions. As the office here in Arkansas is just getting started, a lot of what they're doing is research, trying to figure out what has been done and what is being done. Arola says that the last 15 years for education in Arkansas have been a very unique time. Things have increased in speed exponentially, with some really big things occurring. From the passage of Act 99 in 1999, to No Child Left Behind and the Lakeview rulings, both in 2001, to Arkansas's application for Race to the Top funds in 2010, all of these things leading to Arkansas being accountable for its own outcomes in education. She says this Office of Innovation and Education has been a long time coming.
You know, ultimately, I think what we've been asked to think about is how do we do a better job of personalizing learning for students? Teachers have heard this whole idea of differentiate instruction. What does that look like? And how do you do that?
This generation of student is different. The way they interact with the world varies greatly from those that teach them. These students bring a new way of approaching what they're learning to the table, and it's happening at a very rapid pace. The traditional school improvement models don't always have the timetable for change that's needed to meet the current group of students.
And I see innovation as a way to intervene in that and perhaps find different ways that don't require slow churn of the system, that you can come in and perhaps meet a need. You know, they talk in the language of innovation, we're finding, is they talk about disruptive innovation, and then they talk about sustaining innovation and how different those two pieces are.
Continuous improvement is happening in Arkansas, but simultaneous innovating that can meet immediate needs is not being done. By the time the system changes, a generation of students will have been lost. Innovation does not necessarily mean technology, but technology does play a part, especially in the way that the students interact.
The hard thing about technology is that people have different ideas about what technology means in education. And that arena is so much wider. There are so many possibilities. If we look at it from the student perspective, if we look at it from the teacher perspective, we're talking about something different than if you're talking from the leader perspective or the systems perspective. I'm going to have different concerns and questions about how to use technology depending on what part of the system I'm really representing or trying to work with in innovation.
She says the part that sometimes gets lost is that, yes, there is a technology tie, but the role of the teacher and the human interaction a student gets from the teacher can never be replaced. Technology enhances the teacher's role in facilitating learning. Arola recently visited a high school in Utah, so aptly called Innovations High School.
You did not see a single teacher stand up and lecture. They were not delivering content. They were helping a student access and engage with the content in a way that I think is much more aligned with where we want to go with Common Core. And in Common Core, some of the major shifts are in how we're going to ask students to think about what they're learning and to interact with the information that they're learning. And that is not always something. I think we make the assumption that kids can do certain things without modeling and instruction, and I think that's where I could really see the personalizing of learning coming from that, using technology really to facilitate how that student engages and what they engage with.
A teacher's knowledge of how students learn is still needed in order to guide the content, personalize the content and the technology and the Common Core standards to each student. Arola says that the next generation assessments are a great example of this. Prototypes show these assessments are perfect for this group of learners.
Helping them to visualize, helping them to bridge the gap between what we all had to do, you know, I think more abstractly ourselves. And I think it allows us to jumpstart some of the thinking and growing in our thinking that took a little bit longer before. It's just a different way of approaching it. And those next generation assessments give us a sense, at least for me, when I look at those, I think about how, as a teacher, I, as an adult, I might struggle when I look at the item, but when I show it to a parent or I show it to a student, they look at it and it's the way they're dealing with their world right now. And so it's a perfect fit.
Also a perfect fit, this Office of Innovation in Education and the Arkansas Department of Education. Efforts to reach out to Dr. Tom Kimbrell, director of that office, went unmet. But Arola says that he knew someone had to be put in place to do this job. No one else was tasked with innovation. He told her, "I really want you to think about that student who is in a school system that we're working on improving. It may take 5 or 10 years for the school system to turn around, but that student needs help now. What if the way we help that student also helps that school system?" Arola and her research assistant will primarily be looking at data and use that data to drive decision making. As for where this office will take education,
Dr. Kimbrell's chief of staff, Phyllis Stewart, says we're still determining what the work will be. Things are unveiling as we go, so to speak, in terms of what the Office of Innovation will do. So much like what you see, you know, time and technology is going to, I think we're going to be a rapid change organization ourselves, where we're going to be having to constantly look ahead and adapt and change what we're helping to bring to the table.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Christina Thomas. Good day. It is Thursday, June 20th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas, and joining me on the phone is Becca Martin Brown, features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Do you know who Johnny Winter is?
I don't.
If you love the blues, Johnny Winter is an iconic name.
So I should know who he is then.
And he will be performing this weekend in Fort Smith.
Okay.
At the Fort Smith Blues Festival. It is a $10 ticket.
Sounds good.
For the day. They've also got Eric Sardinas and Jeff Strahan, J.P. Soares, who was just at Eureka Springs, Oreo Blue, Lee and the Mojo Doctors. It's going to be a great weekend of music. Starts at 6 o'clock on Friday at Harry E. Kelly Park in Fort Smith. Continues with the last show at 10:30 Saturday with Oreo Blue. Johnny Winter plays at 9 o'clock Saturday night in the headliner spot. And again, tickets are $10 a day. Kids 12 and younger get in free with an adult. I don't see how you could get a better blues experience than that.
Sounds good.
You can find out more at riverfrontbluesfest.org.
I did recognize some of those names.
Check out Johnny Winter.
All right. Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is Features Editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
The Artisphere Festival is well into its second half now, the emphasis squarely on classical music. Small ensembles have been performing in various places for the past few nights in Northwest Arkansas. Tomorrow night, the full Artisphere Festival Orchestra will perform the first of their three major concerts, A Night of Beethoven, inside Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The orchestra's musicians are handpicked by conductor Corrado Riveras. More than 80 musicians come from around the country, from around the world, in fact, to join together quickly and beautifully. Yesterday, the full orchestra had its first rehearsal, fewer than 60 hours before the baton drops on that Beethoven concert. For Corrado, the time between airport and rehearsal was incredibly brief. Bad weather in Chicago had delayed his arrival at XNA until late the night before. Yesterday, on stage at Walton Arts Center, just moments after the end of that first practice, he was enthusiastic, vibrant, even giddy.
We have always not to forget that, yes, we are working, but it's always a pleasure. So even in difficult conditions, I never forget that I'm very lucky. So the moment you start to play, you forget everything. But it's really amazing what you're saying, because the first year, I think we had 82 people in the orchestra, and I have chosen all of them one by one. But until you see all of them together, you think, oh, for sure we're going to miss someone in the first rehearsal. And 1 hour before the downbeat, everyone was here. And it was really an emotion, I have to say. It's like to see a new baby coming.
This is the third year for Corrado, the music director of Opera Philadelphia, to conduct the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. He's not the only three-time alum. Many of the musicians who were picked for the first edition have come back for years 2 and 3. Camden Shaw, a cellist both with the orchestra and the Dover Quartet, says he looks forward to coming back each summer.
This is such a well-run festival. Every facet of it is so professional. They treat you really well. It's comfortable. The food here is great, and the people are fantastic to work with, and it's a great orchestra. So really just every dimension of it is worth coming back to. It's very special.
Camden and the rest of the Dover Quartet have already played 2 concerts this past weekend before the larger ensemble gathered. Joel Link, violinist with both the quartet and the orchestra, is making his 2nd appearance as part of the festival. He missed last year to attend a friend's wedding. He says he was reminded quickly upon his return this year of what his favorite part of the festival is, the audience.
They seem, when you're performing, you can definitely get a certain feeling from the audience, and it actually has a huge part in what we do and the kind of energy that we feed off of from them. And you can tell literally right away. And I think all the concerts we play here always have a lot of energy, just because the crowd seems to absorb everything like a sponge. And it's really exciting to play for people that you feel like are putting themselves into the performance, hopefully as much as we are. And we can definitely tell that the ones here, we were talking about actually after the last concert, like how fun it is to play here.
That was the first ever meeting between the Artisphere Festival piano and Andrew Tyson. Yesterday afternoon, he played those few notes just to become acquainted with the instrument he'll be with during tomorrow night's Beethoven concert. Andrew is the first prize winner of the 2011 Young Concert Artist International Auditions, and he arrived in Fayetteville just days after competing in the Queen Elizabeth Piano Competition in Belgium and completing a European tour. Now, he's turned his full attention to the Beethoven on tomorrow's program.
Well, you know, for this particular event, I really could not have predicted what would happen is I entered the Queen Elizabeth and I sort of thought, well, the competition is over June 1st. But after the competition was over, we were immediately thrown into this concert tour with repertoire that we hadn't played before. So I'm coming straight from that. The last concert there was 2 days ago. So it's really not possible sometimes to predict. And also that tour, we were traveling every day. So there wasn't really a lot of time to, you know, practice the Beethoven triple, but of course I worked on it before.
And unlike many of his fellow musicians, Andrew doesn't carry his own instrument with him. That's why he wanted to get just a feel for the piano yesterday afternoon. He says each instrument can be different.
For example, where I just came from in Brussels, they don't have New York Steinway, of course. It's only Hamburg Steinway. New York Steinway maybe is a bit warmer, and then the Hamburg is a bit more singing. So if you want to create a warm sound on a Hamburg Steinway, you have to work for that. And if you want to create a singing sound on a New York Steinway, you have to work for that. So you know, it's a question of taste, but also a question of approach as to how you adjust and deal with every new instrument.
Passion, experience, and certainly professionalism play big roles in why such a feat of music can be pulled off in such a short amount of time. As soon as the orchestra completes the Beethoven tomorrow night, they're thinking about and rehearsing for Monday night's program of Mozart at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. After that, they'll have all of 3 days to prep for the finale of Russian Masterpieces back at Walton Arts Center. Camden Shaw, cellist and now 3-time veteran of the festival, says the beginning is always just a bit hectic, but he can tell there's a subtle difference with this edition.
What is a little bit different now, I think, is that the vibe is a little more relaxed, because of course anytime you meet, you know, if you're assuming that you know almost no one when you come to an orchestra, if you're meeting 81 new people, which was the experience for a few of those people, you're just a little bit more nervous. Now, like Milena just mentioned, it feels kind of like a reunion. You come back and you see all these people you really missed over the course of the year. So actually everyone's just really at rest and having a great time. So that's great to feel.
For Corrado Riveras, the conductor, the festival is another opportunity to break the routine. Even though he's in his third year at the helm of this orchestra, he says the variety of music and the variety of venues keeps it all very fresh.
Every time the piece is completely new, because of the people, the sound, the venue, as you say, it's always a new piece. And that really makes the excitement of our job, which is really not a job. I mean, they pay you to have fun.
The Artisphere Festival Orchestra will play tomorrow night at 7 at Walton Arts Center, then Monday night at 8 at Crystal Bridges, and then Friday the 28th back at Walton Arts Center. One note, Monday night's concert at Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art will be broadcast live on KUAF beginning at 8. That's a first for the museum, a first for the Artisphere Festival, and a first for us. And if you'd like to hear more from the artists I talked to yesterday at Walton Arts Center, listen to the intermission Monday night on KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large.
Thank you so much, Michael Thomas Walker, for being on our Tin Roof Project here on Sales from the South.
Who cleaned? Who took out the trash? Where are his things? What happened? I knew that Aunt Bee would have the answers to that question. So I called Aunt Bee, and I met her at the one place that a walker goes to have a serious conversation, the bar.
Tales from the South, Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF.
And yes, that's Tales from the South every Saturday afternoon at 3:30 on KUAF. Earlier, we talked about, just a few minutes ago actually, talked about the fact that Monday night from 8 until 10 on KUAF, a live broadcast of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. Absolutely live from Crystal
Bridges
Museum of American Art. Now, I bring that up again because we just heard the promo for Tales from the South. Keep your ears open because there is a collaboration in the works between Tales from the South, the Roots Festival, the Fayetteville Public Library, and KUAF. We're going to have a live broadcast later this summer involving all of those entities. Of course, the Roots Festival, it's not exactly the last weekend of August this year because of the way the calendar works, but it's... Boy, I should have the dates in front of me. It's like the 23rd, 24th, 25th,
sure, but it's,
that
yes,
weekend
it's
of
close.
August. You know, we're going to have all the things going on throughout Fayetteville for this urban music festival. But stay tuned for a collaboration with Tales from the South, too, that you might be interested in learning more about if you like that program and you like live radio.
That's exciting.
It is exciting.
Another collaboration. I know we talk a lot about Artisphere, but there's a collaboration with Artisphere and Clubhouse Fitness in Fayetteville, as well as Soul Yoga Lounge, mm-hmm. happening this Saturday morning as part of Artisphere. And it's also at Crystal Bridges. Summer solstice, the first day of summer, is Saturday. And Soul Yoga Lounge will be doing sunrise yoga beginning at 5:57 a.m.
Well, any special reason 5:57? Is that when the solstice arrives?
I think that's when the sun, that's sunrise.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
all right.
Sunrise. Sure. And then also
hence the name, yes.
Yes. Also that morning, they'll be doing at 10 o'clock from 10 until noon, 108 sun salutations, also at Soul Yoga, or also at Crystal Bridges.
And the sun boxes will also be there.
They will.
And
I did yoga a few weeks ago at the Botanical Gardens with the sunboxes. And if you like yoga and you like nature, it was an experience.
Really? I was going to ask because you did that while I was out of town and I knew you were planning to. So it was worth
it. It was great.
Are you going to be up there at Crystal Bridges Saturday at 5:57?
Planning on it. Planning on it.
You live in Fayetteville.
I do.
So you're going to. Okay.
Leaving by 5, probably?
Yeah. That's what's called an early Friday night. Don't forget also Sunday night, the makeup. Well, Saturday is the makeup date for Spring Fest.
Right.
Even though it'll now be summer, we're still going to have Spring Fest. Mm-hmm. That was kind of weathered and snowed out back in May. First ever measurable May snowfall.
Spring Fest on the first day of summer.
Exactly, because of winter weather. And Sunday night, Old Crow Medicine Show making up their show at the Amp that also was going to be that weekend, and because of the frigid temperatures was canceled or postponed.
And then in a few minutes, we'll announce winners.
Yes, if you knew your bad Arkansas geography from a 1970s movie.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation.
It is Thursday, June 20th, 2013. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And with us is Jody Beznoska. She is Vice President for Communications at Walton Arts Center.
Hi.
Welcome.
Hello. Thank you. Another beautiful day.
Yes.
It's nice, isn't it? And it's Artisphere time. We've been kind of quietly having lots of Artisphere events going on, even though we haven't talked much about them.
But, was there something last night?
Yeah, there was a concert up at Cooper Chapel. I was out there for that. It was beautiful. It was a quintet, and it was two violins, a cello, and two violas, which I learned is not a arrangement that you usually see.
Not a common one.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, we've had a couple of our chamber concerts, and tonight is a very busy evening with the Artisphere documentary film, little mini film festival happening tonight.
Correct me if I'm wrong, that is relatively inexpensive?
Yeah, that would be as inexpensive as you can get.
Free.
Also known as free.
I suppose if you paid people to come, that'd be even less.
Yeah, I suppose that could be the extreme of the situation. But it's free.
Free. Yeah. And which venue is that in?
That's in Star Theater.
So about 250?
170 people, maybe.
So if you're interested in this,
yeah,
be
show
on
up,
time
be on
or a
time,
little...
don't be late. You'll get to see a film about Craig Colarusso and his Sunboxes project, which has been all over Northwest Arkansas as part of Artisphere. It's called Install, Sound, Light, and Craig Colarusso. And then you'll get to see 10,000 Trees, which is a documentary done by Sarah Ginsberg, who is actually documenting this year's Artisphere. And then we will also show Bending Sticks, the sculpture of Patrick Doherty. And that is, everybody who has come to the WAC in the last year will recognize the big stick work figures on the front lawn. And this is a documentary explaining how his work has evolved and how it is created. So we'll show all three of those. And it should be great.
You know, it's so hard to see documentary film on a bigger screen than your television.
Yeah.
You know, now with the advent of cable and pay-per-view.
Netflix,
you can see them. But to see them with a community, mm-hmm. with other people on a bigger screen, it doesn't come around very often. And the fact that it's free, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's really neat. And so it makes for a really nice evening, actually, because a little bit earlier, starting at 6 o'clock, musicians from the Artisphere Festival Orchestra will be out doing the quote-unquote pub crawl throughout downtown Fayetteville, where they'll be going to various locations and playing music. So if you find yourself, I would bet they're going to be at our Sega's. They're probably going to be on Dixon Street at some of those restaurants. If you find yourself out, you could hunt them down and then go see the film fest. All kinds of madness going on tonight. And then tomorrow night we'll have the first of the big concerts with the entire festival orchestra. Tomorrow night is an evening of Beethoven. It's a 7 o'clock performance at Walton Arts Center. There are tickets left, but not many. So you might want to get them in advance, and they're pretty affordable. I think they're $10.
Yeah, this is the last part of the 10x10.
Yes.
Of 2012, 2013.
Exactly. So we'll have the whole 10x10 experience with the sticky notes and the, you know, special drinks and the party in the lobby afterwards. And the music is the Beethoven Concerto for violin, cello, and piano in C major. It's Beethoven's triple concerto. And then Symphony No. 7 in A major. And apparently we have some pretty spectacular soloists for that piano concerto. That will be a real... We have piano, violin, and cello. Then Saturday, you could go up to... you could join us on the Fayetteville Square in the morning at the Farmer's Market. We're going to be doing a butterfly release. If you've come through... Well, not a real butterfly release.
Take back the
I know.
Cue.
Oh, yeah, right. I know. If you've come through Walton Arts Center's lobby in the past, 6 weeks, you've seen both the leaping animals... And then you have also seen this sculpture called The Swarm, and it's by an artist named Tasha Lewis, and she creates, thousands of these little magnetic butterflies that she decorates metal structures with. Well, what's going to happen on the square on Saturday morning in Fayetteville is we're going to take those butterflies and we're going to migrate them around the Fayetteville Square. So we're asking the community to come help us to grab the butterflies and help us decorate the square over the course of the
So you can just kind of walk by and pick one up and move it.
Yeah.
And,
oh, that's fun.
Yeah, and then once that's over, people will be able to take a butterfly as a keepsake. So that's what we mean by releasing the butterflies.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because she has butterflies that she creates herself for her sculptures, and then when she first got here, she worked with a bunch of volunteers, and they made almost 1,000 special butterflies just for the Walton Arts Center for the region.
Well, I want to snap one.
And, yeah. And will these be relatively inexpensive?
I believe they will be free.
Wow.
Yeah. I believe the whole thing starts early at the farmer's market, probably 7 o'clock-ish, and I think it goes for a few hours until about noon. At least that's what I'm remembering. You can check out our website just for specifics. So that's Saturday morning. And then Saturday later on during the day, you should go to Crystal Bridges and spend the day up there because we're going to have all sorts of artisphere things going on, all sorts of just ongoing arts activities. There'll be lots of different kinds of music. And we're having the summer solstice celebration at, I believe it starts at 6:30 at the Terrell Sky Space. And I'm pretty sure all that is free and open to the public also.
Great.
So great things going on. And that's Saturday. Let's see. Something kind of big is happening on...
Monday night,
right?
Yeah. Yes.
I wanted to ask you guys what's going on with that.
Kyle knows way more about that than I do.
Well, a live broadcast. It'll begin at 8 o'clock at Crystal Bridges in the Great Hall. It's the... Artisphere Festival Orchestra, Corrado, conducting. Mozart in the Museum is what it's called. Yep. We'll have it live on the air on KUAF. So broadcast will start at 8. We'll have about a 10-minute, get you ready performance, some interviews for the brief intermission, more live classical music, and then kind of a fun thing to take it through to the end till 10. So 8 to 10 live broadcast from Crystal Bridges.
Yeah, no big deal. You guys can pull that off. It should be a really interesting experience. I mean,
yes, it should be.
I don't
yes.
know that they've had an ensemble that big in the Great Hall before.
Well, the Great Hall's great, but it's not that big.
Mm-hmm.
No, yeah. I mean, it's a first for Crystal Bridges. It's a first for Artisphere. It's a first for KUAF. So a lot of us are...
I think it's going to be fantastic. Well, that's Monday. And then there will be lots more chamber music concerts over next week. And then we'll conclude the festival residency with a final concert on the 20th. Let me just make sure I get this right. On the 28th at 7 o'clock. This is also in the Walton Arts Center Big Hall. This one is a Russian Masterpieces concert. So these are the big romantic, sweeping kind of symphonies. Rachmaninoff's Piano Concerto, again with Andrew Tyson, and Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 5.
Yeah.
So those are big ones. And, I heard some of the musicians playing last night at the chapel, and I just went, yeah, it's really, really neat to hear these people play. They are just at the top of their game, and they're so enthusiastic and friendly, and they love it.
And so far, to a person that I've talked to, they just love coming here. They love Northwest Arkansas.
Yeah, they said last night that several of them have been here for 3 years now, and it's starting to feel like a tradition. So, yeah.
Artisphierefestival.org?
That's correct. You can get all of the information there. You can also get it at waltonartscenter.org. Let's also not forget the very last show of the Walton Arts Center season. Also, on the very last day... second to last day of the Walton Arts Center fiscal year, we have Spank, which is the musical parody of the 50 Shades of Grey books. So that's a Saturday. I think that's an 8 o'clock show, the 29th of June.
One show only.
Yeah. And then we will be, it will be the new fiscal year for us, and on we go to next year.
Thank you, Jody.
Thank you.
Awesome. Jody Beznoska is Vice President of Communications with Walton Arts Center.
The Bentonville Art and Culinary Festival offers over 70 different events this month, including live music, theater and film, and other visual arts, special culinary events, hands-on children's programming, and more. Information is available at downtownbentonville.org or 254-0254. KUAF presents a live radio broadcast of Mozart in the Museum from Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. It's Monday night, beginning at 8 p.m. It'll be hosted by KUAF's Katie Hendrickson, the host of Note, as well as myself, along with Walton Arts Center CEO Peter B. Lane. This event will feature the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. More information is available at artisphearfestival.org. Support for this live broadcast comes from Cox Communications and the Bentonville Art and Culinary Festival.
And as we mentioned earlier, the Old Crow Medicine Show will be playing at the Amp on Sunday evening, and we have winners for tickets to that show.
Five winners of a pair of tickets each. Now, to qualify to win, you had to know the answer to some bad geography from an Arkansas, a movie that at least partially takes place in Arkansas. Earlier, just before the clip we're about to hear, the characters announced that they are in Decent County, Arkansas. There is no Decent County, Arkansas.
I've never heard of it.
No, well, it doesn't exist. And then this exchange happens that misplaces Fayetteville on an interstate that doesn't exist anywhere in the world either. We asked, what movie is this from? Here's the clip.
My handle's Silver Tongue Devil, and I'm here to tell you your fellow CBers are mighty proud of you out there. Come on.
Well, thank you, son. I appreciate it.
Tell me, you coming up on Fayetteville on Interstate 82?
Yeah, we're almost on top of it.
Well, then I got a big bad bear story for you out there. I just rolled past a county mounty roadblock down there.
You are a silver-tongued devil.
And that is from the 1977 blockbuster Smokey and the Bandit.
Smokey and the Bandit.
Have you ever seen that movie?
It's been a long time.
Do you
Burt
remember,
Reynolds?
Burt Reynolds, Sally Field, yeah. Jerry Reed. Do you remember what the premise is?
No.
There is a wager made between the bandit and a rich mogul, whether he can transport something from Texas to Florida in a certain number of hours. You know what his precious cargo was?
What?
Coors beer.
Oh, well, that's pretty precious.
And that's when you could not get Coors in Arkansas. Yeah. It was illegal. I don't know if it was illegal to have, but you couldn't get it.
You couldn't get it. Yeah.
Right. So anyway, Fayetteville is not on Interstate 82, and it's not in Decent County, Arkansas.
All right.
Many, many people knew that.
Yes, a lot of people did. We had quite a few entries.
We may have set a record for number of correct answers on that one.
We had quite a few.
Yes.
And we had five winners
Who
will each win one pair of tickets to the Old Crow Medicine Show on Sunday evening. The winners are Kara McAlea.
We hope we're saying that.
Yeah.
Karen, thanks. Kara.
And Shallon Carroll.
Mm-hmm.
Derek Orpin.
Okay.
Mike Johnson.
All right.
And Bryce Harrison.
Well, the five of you and five or one friend of each of you five will all be enjoying the Old Crow Medicine Show concert that is Sunday night at the Amp.
Right. Yes. Congratulations and thanks for listening. We'll notify you via email also. So.
That's right. And the tickets will be, I believe, at Will
Call. I believe so.
Okay. This is Ozarks at Large. Or actually, I should tell you first that this is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, not in Decent County. None of them are. Rogers.
Farmington.
There you go. And this is also Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Christina Thomas.
You and I back together Sunday morning.
We will. We'll be back together for the first time in a few weeks.
Right. Yeah. Weekend Ozarks at Large. Antoinette Grajeda will be back with me here in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio for a brand new edition of Ozarks at Large tomorrow at noon. And don't forget the live concert Monday night. I'll be with Katie Hendrickson at that point.
You
have a small staff, but we stretch us out
We do a lot, that's for sure.
All right. And one other reminder, next week, the last week for Talk of the Nation, it will go quiet, dormant after that. So, very good.